Blog Talk Radio.
Life seems to crush your dreams, so find your balance for all your needs. A little work, some family fun. Find your love, keep your life on the run. Told you how the story goes, so write your own script before you grow old. Live your life, laugh out.
And welcome to the Star Chamber Show live podcast, episode number 314 tonight. Thanks again to the great band Far Cry for letting us use that great intro music. Always love to give them props and shout outs. It is a great night here in Lexington, and again, good weather projected. So yeah, it's going to be a great show, and we're going to be getting underway right now. And joining me tonight in the co-hosting booth, our two fine folks currently on right now is the one, the only, the man behind the Dark Style hashtag, Daniel Dark, and joining us in progress, the lovely, the vivacious, the wonderful Holly Philippi. And Holly had a very busy day on some doctor appointment stuff, so I let her get a little bit of rest before the show. So she'll be joining us a couple minutes in progress. I think Daniel and I can get you warmed up. Daniel just joined me. Daniel, how are you?
I'm doing fine, sir. Are you having a good night tonight?
Oh, good day. It was a busy day, but a good one. I put out a couple social media posts on it, but yeah, it's just about covering about everything in the creative world, but getting it done. And today I just mentioned that we had a little bit on the home front with doctor's appointments and so forth, so yeah, we're getting it all done. But thankfully the weather projection tonight is good, so we've been watching that since 2 weeks ago. We're keeping an extra eye on the weather, so tonight's guest is a friend of the guest we had 2 weeks ago, Bridget Nelson. And so we're just hoping that we didn't get lousy weather on tonight. Otherwise, I'd suspect a curse. But Holly is joining us right now, I think.
It was
Holly, you left.
Interesting a few weeks back, so
hopefully you don't have that. I am here.
Yes. It was funny. I won't put the person on the spot that
she
sent
is
me
here.
This message, but it's too funny not to read, though. I got this after that show 2 weeks ago. Some the person, I won't put them on the spot by saying their name, but they sent me a note the next day after listening to the downloaded version, and they said, listening to the Bridget Nelson episode, how many of Murphy's Laws did you break to get through this episode? Great saves. You should play center field for the Yankees with all these diving catches you're making after the Transformer blew. So... I got a sense
we spare no expense.
Yeah, we spare no expense. Yeah, we got backup transformers now that we're keeping in stock just in case. No expense is spared. I'm just was telling them I was letting you get a little more rest, cutting it close to the show for you, but I wanted to get some rest. You had a very busy day.
Yeah, I woke up and I was like, Steven, you forgot about me.
No. But we got the chat room underway. Carol Pre-Flattish, Sandy Lender are kicking off in the chat room here, so join them if you are able to and chat with us. And, of course, we always take questions, comments, and insights from the chat room. And we're going to see if Sandy can make it to the 9:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time mark, evidently. She says she's awake right now. So hopefully we'll keep Sandy aboard for as long as we can. Oh, well. We'll try, Sandy. But tonight, we had a good week. Holly and I have been hard at it working, and we've got some great folks that have joined us, at Imaginarium recently. Great authors, Christopher Woods, Colleen Green from Writers in Dayton. We've had Colleen on the Star Chamber show before. That's in our archive. Mm-hmm. We have done a show with her in the past. And then one of our recent guests, the amazing Pete Catania, is aboard Imaginarium officially. Yes, he is a panelist. Of course, a great novel, Why Not Wichita, was featured in that recent episode. And I'm pleased to say that he is coming right down the pike with the follow-up to that right now. And I'm really excited about that one. That's going to be a fun, fun book when it comes out. I think they're getting the cover art ready for it, but it's called Why Not Wichita, Part 2, Wind of Whispers. Yeah, Pete is awesome. You know, he, as we mentioned the show, at the time, he is also a filmmaker, screenwriter. He's directed and produced everything from commercials to documentaries, short films, and features. And he was actually originally based in Hollywood. So, yeah, he moved and currently in Atlanta, Georgia, and where he's focusing on his novels. And so, yeah, he's going to be coming and probably be featured in both the film, independent film, and the writing side programming. So I'm really pumped about Pete being aboard, just a character and lots of energy, lots of wit, and just, I mean, he's going to be a phenomenal panelist, but I'm really excited about Pete joining us. I think Imaginarium attendees, he's going to be a hit. Holly today, Pete's going to be a hit. No question. I can't wait to see how people respond to him. So get ready, Holly.
I'm here.
Yeah, get ready.
And I'm ready. I'm ready for Pete, hey, too. Yep.
Holly is in the chat room, by the way, folks. Yes.
I am in there chatting it up. Carol Preflesh, we talked about watching the Julia Child show on HBO Max, and she got to watch it, and she said, oh, it's so good. It really is. If y'all haven't seen it, check it out. It follows Julia's life as she just started, like, getting into her TV show part of her life. So, you know, her husband was retired and all of that. So, yeah, it's so good. I love Julia, though.
Yeah, good show. And Holly is herself tonight in the chat room. We had a funny incident, I think it was last week, where Holly, when she logged in, somehow the system logged her in, and myself as the Star Chamber show both. So we were both commenting under the same avatar. So we both had to specify which one of us was talking at any given point in the chat. You can probably tell by
the title. It let me sign in this week. I'm signed in as myself. But, yeah, last week I'd have to write something and I'd say Holly. And Steve would write something, he'd say Steven. You know, because, you couldn't tell who was who. Because the week before when we had all that trouble, I had signed in. I finally got my hotspot going on my phone, signed into the switchboard as host to try and, you know, get things back on track. And then by me doing that, it kept me signed in. And then to last week, it did not want me to sign in as myself.
No, that was funny. Yeah, I was chuckling about that. But at least we didn't have Transformers explode last week. Yeah, thankfully, our guest Q didn't have to go through all that. That was a good show. I liked last week's show quite a lot. That was a fun one.
Mm-hmm.
But so what's new with you, Mr. Dark? Give us a quick update on your world since didn't get a chance to talk to you before the show.
I just finished reading a book today called Outwitting the Devil by Napoleon Hill, if you've ever heard of him.
Yes.
Very interesting book. I would suggest it to anybody that's wanting to get ahead in the world. The book was written before we had TVs and stuff. He's got reference to radio and moving pictures and stuff like that, and you know that he talks about in the book. But yeah, it's very, very interesting take on an interview with the devil.
Very cool.
So,
very cool. That's awesome. I'm gonna have to check that out for sure. Well, we also
you can listen to it.
Also,
on,
do want to mention. Go ahead.
YouTube is an audiobook too, so
yeah,
it's only
check
like
that
3 hours
and
something long that way.
And I do want to give a shout out to the Bluegrass Writers Coalition. I will be a guest at their the Bluegrass Conference of Writers, taking place this Saturday, April the 30th, in Frankfort, Kentucky. And again, that's Bluegrass Writers Coalition. You can find their site, bluegrasswriterscoalition.com. Really looking forward to this. We've got looks like they got a great day planned with some great programming content. We're going to be there also having a table and hopefully meet some readers and doing a lot of fun stuff. But Virginia Smith's going to be there. Hallie Bridgman's going to be there. Richard Taylor, Crystal Wilkinson, Larry W. Moore. Got a great roster of guests that are featured. Terry Carter, great work roster of guests featured. That's in Frankfort, Kentucky, this Saturday, and that goes from 10 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. And they also, again, have a site for this, and that is at bluegrasswriterscoalition.com/writers-conference. But if you go to bluegrasswriterscoalition.com, you'll find them, and definitely encourage you to go. Holly and I will both be there, excited to participate, and I want to pass along that for sure. So that's kind of exciting. So, yes, we'll be there.
I also just got off the Zoom just a little while ago with the National Speakers Association group and stuff. They we had a professional race car driver on there with us tonight.
That's cool.
Many people would know.
That's awesome. You're always seeing cool stuff on your Zoom sessions.
Bristol and different places like that. And then he's become a business person, everything after he's got out of the racing, and is a keynote speaker at different places. So.
Awesome.
Which is
that's cool.
One of the things that I'm doing a little bit of now, so we'll see how that works.
Keep us posted. And I will go ahead and get our sponsors recognized right now, our wonderful sponsors. It looks like our guest is on deck, so we'll get tonight's conversation going early. And so tonight's sponsors are the wonderful Per Bostedt Publications and also Sandy Lender. Yes, the genre blender herself. So we'll go ahead and give you a little bit about Per Bostedt, and then we're going to take you to a Sandy Lender ad, and definitely support both of them. Tell them, you appreciate their support of the show. Great talent all across the board with both of tonight's sponsors. So for Per Bostedt, Per Bostedt Publications is a small press based in the Louisville metro area, specializing in speculative fiction and other outside-the-box books. With over 30 titles in print and ebook formats and a handful of audiobooks, Per Bostedt offers a little bit of everything. Explore post-World War II England with 11-year-old Sylvie and Edelweiss for Elizabeth, the sequel to Andrea Gilbey's Bottle Tops for Battleships, or dive into the thrilling world of Karma and Crime, a new supernatural mystery by J. Paul Burroughs. You can find these titles and more at PerBostedtPublications.com and Amazon, or you can find the press in person at regional events such as the Imaginarium Convention in July. Per Bostedt Publications for Timeless Tales Unfold. Thank you, Teely. Thank you, Sarah Marion and Marion Allen. Are awesome. Appreciate your support so much. And now I'm going to come over to the awesome, the wonderful Sandy Lender and give her a listen. Go buy a book of hers and support her.
Fantasy author Sandy Lender wants to take you on vacation. All you have to do is grab one of Sandy's many spec fiction titles and let her sweep you away. Get ready to cheer for strong heroines, multifaceted zombies, and, of course, all those fabulous dragons. Follow Sandy Lender on the Amazon platform to select your next summer vacation destination.
Thank you, Sandy. And yes, your summer vacation destination was Sandy Lender, the Genre Blender. Go get a few of her books. And thank you, Sandy, so much. And we're actually on time tonight. It's a miracle. Yeah, we're usually a minute or two off. Mm-hmm. But hey, we're going to go right to our guest. And this is exciting for me. I'm really excited about tonight because we get a chance to finally talk about the world of art that applies to books. Yes, tonight's guest is an illustrator and book cover artist. And let me tell you a few of the credentials. Tonight's guest has appeared on the cover of legendary Weird Tales magazine. And as Holly has been just talking about all week, she's selected by the Bram Stoker Estate to create the cover for the 125th anniversary edition of Dracula. She does cover art for great independent presses such as Cemetery Dance Publications, Thunderstorm Books, and Raw Dog Screaming Press. And she's also illustrated works by New York Times best-selling authors, including Jonathan Mayberry, George Romero, and Christopher Golden. And yes, tonight, for the first time, I am proud, honored, excited to welcome also the one, the only, Lynn Hansen. And Lynn, your microphone is now on. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
See, I told you you'd know when we welcomed you onto the show. Great to have you.
Smooth as silk. Smooth as silk.
Good news, too. Weather projection is supposed to be calm all night. Hopefully we won't have transformers explode. That's the goal. Your friend Bridget had quite an adventure and got stuck with just me a couple of weeks ago when we had a transformer blow up and tornado warnings going on and had like one single connection left with no control over the board.
Oh, my goodness.
But that being said, there's no threat of that tonight. Knock on wood here real quick. But good to have you. So tell us, like I said, I've introduced you as an illustrator and cover artist, but yeah, tell a little bit about your style, because I definitely want to get into a discussion of your art and cover art to kick some things off with this.
Well, I've been a horror fan my entire life. I'm a horror artist. I like one of my earliest memories is watching the Late Late Show with my dad on one side and my big brother on the other, curled up watching all the scary movies from the time I was tiny. And so that's always been my genre. And I've been a cover artist for 12 years now. And when I started out, doing horror, but I also would do every genre because that's what you do when you're trying to like build your career. You're like, let me try. Mm-hmm. If you want a shirtless guy for a spicy romance cover, I can do that. Or alien spaceships, sure. And then I was like, but you know where my heart is horror. I'm a monster girl. And so about 4 years ago, I decided I'm only going to do horror, and if it means that I get less work, I will do that, and that'll be fine. And the opposite happened. When I took out of my portfolio all the other things that I did and just kept the things that I loved doing the most, my career just exploded. It's mind-boggling to me. And so now I get to wake up every single morning and I get to read amazing books, take all of my favorite parts, and then create art that will help other people find these amazing books. And I'm just like, I can't believe I have this awesome of a job.
Amazing.
Awesome. Yeah, it is a great feeling. Yeah, when you're working at what you love, and certainly
your
art is just
yes.
We were bragging on you a bit during Bridget's show because you did the cover for her collection of Bouquet of Viscera, And it's so cool because, like, when you just glance at it real quick, I mean, it has a real elegant kind of look to it on the macro level. But then when you start looking at it in detail, I mean, you've got all this very visceral, macabre detail. It's worked, you know, with skeleton elements and bones and things like that worked into each of the images on her cover. I mean, it works on two different levels entirely at the same time. It's a really amazing cover. And, I just bring that up because we did talk about this cover in particular, but yeah, I love your style and you've got the horror genre vibe now. There's no question.
Well,
there.
You know, I think I have to say that you absolutely nailed one of the things that is the most important. One of the most important things for me as an artist. One of the things that I love is, like, I like to have layers in what I do. And so every book cover starts out and for the most part, people are either going to see it from across the bookstore or they're going to see it in a tiny little, you know, inch and a half rectangle on Amazon. And when you see it that small, you better be able to say, I know what kind of book it is. Mm-hmm. And it's a kind of book that I like. And I'm interested. And then when you click on it, it's going to be, you know, like, you know, 2-3 inches maybe, right? And it better not just be like, oh, look, it's bigger. It better be like, oh, and now there's something I didn't notice. Now I have questions. And then they're going to read the book description. And if that book description and that cover are in sync, now a reader has interacted with a book multiple times, and they're more likely to click that Buy Now button because they're already engaged with the story before they even read the first page, and that's what a good cover can do for you.
No, it's the truth.
Exactly.
It definitely sells, you know, the book. People do judge a book by the cover. If the cover's bad, they're not going to buy the book. You know, that cover that pops and speaks to them, like you said, you know what you're getting into by seeing that good cover, you know, and beautiful cover. And you know that's a book that you want to read, you know. Like with the horror fans, you know, they're going to be able to tell right away, you know, if it's paranormal or if it's, you know, monsters or, you know, they're going to be able to tell and be like, oh, that looks interesting. I'm going to pick that one up, you know. and we try to tell authors that all the time. It's like people do judge a book by its cover. It could be the best well-written book ever, but if you've got a crappy cover, it's hard to sell it. It really is.
It's just not going to get into somebody's hands. And,
mm-mm.
You know, you have an opportunity, you only have one opportunity to make a first impression, whether it's a book cover
mm-hmm.
or anything else, right? And that book cover is the first interaction that people have over with your story. And, you know, the other thing is it's really important that it not just be beautiful art or cool art. It has to be the right to sell that book.
Right.
It has to connect with that story. I mean, and in a way that will make that book memorable for people.
Right.
And so, because I see a lot of, you know, I read the books that I create for, go figure, right? But there are a lot of artists who don't. And
right.
They go with that
That's
book
true.
Description, and they just kind of go, and then, you know, and then the book doesn't have quite the connection. This cover doesn't have quite the connection that it should have to make people really remember, you know. And it just makes a huge difference. And it's also, I mean, a cover also, when you can convey the style and tone and mood and kind of the core essence of the book
on the cover, you have more likelihood of connecting with the right readers. And the right readers are going to appreciate your book and enjoy it and review it and tell their friends.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I did a cover for Jeff Strand, who is my husband, and James A. Moore. They did a book called The Haunted Forest Tour. And this book had been around for 10 years with two different publishers. So all of their fans already had an opportunity to read this book if they had wanted to. And so they got their rights back, and they said, let's put it out ourselves. And so I did a brand new cover. And the cover is basically a giant clawed arm coming out of the woods, overturning a tram load of tourists with another tram on its way. And that, and so if you look at that cover and you say, wow, I think I'd like a book about giant monsters attacking tram loads of tourists, that's mm-hmm. exactly what you're going to get in that book. And that book, that 10-year-old book, became both of their best-selling books for a while when it was re-released.
Nice.
And it's just insane. But that's what a good cover can do for you. And it's not, you know, and it's, there's also, you know, I don't know, it's not a science, but there are very practical things that you can do to improve a cover and make sure that the cover really does its job, you know. And, you know, and part of that mm-hmm. is having a really, like, legible title and being able to read the names so that people remember the name and the title so that they can tell people about it. You know, to be able to work on that really tiny thumbnail perspective but also have more to it than what you first see when you look at that thumbnail. It's just insanely important. And, but, you know, I love it. I love getting to
it.
You do some
beautiful covers.
Yeah.
And the one I'm really drawn to because, well, I love all things Victorian, but I love that you did a complex accident of life. It was the blackout poetry inspired by Mary Shelley's Frankenstein, and you've got the gloved like hand coming down with the flowers, but it looks Victorian, the whole aspect, and it's got like a poetry section like on the front. You've got the words, and then you popped out by creating the bold print with the title, so you've got the other words that's like in the poem or whatever behind it, but then the title is in bold letters and spells out, you know, a complex accident of life. That's so clever. Yes, it's. I've never seen anything like that. It's very clever.
And my other secret, like, because I do stuff that nobody will ever know except for me. And so not only is it, I wanted to emulate that blackout poetry feel with the title, but the sentences that each one of those words comes from actually comes from Frankenstein. And not just from Frankenstein. I actually found a scanned in digital copy of the second edition of Frankenstein. And so I actually was able to take it from the manuscript. So that font is even from the manuscript itself.
Nice.
And it's just like,
that's what gives it the feel. I mean, you've got the whole feel. You look at that, it draws you, you know, to people like me that love Victorian, that love the creepy, the, you know, the horror aspect of it too. And I mean, that draws you, bam, you know, that's going to draw people like me that like the same things are going to take a stop and look at that book. Yeah.
Well,
it's very clever. I like it.
And Jessica McHugh's poetry is just amazing in that book. I mean, it was like, you know, I loved it so much that I actually, like, called up one of my friends and said, you've got to hear this poem. Like, there was one poem I was just like, you have to hear this poem. And, you know, that's one of the other things that when I work with new clients, I actually make people send me the manuscript before I even agree to work with folks, because I feel like it's important for me to make sure that the book is a good fit for me, that I know, because there's a lot, the more covers that I do, the more folks say, oh, I just love you and I think you'd be perfect for my book, but I'm not. And part of me, for me, because I have to be able to love the books that I create for and to be really proud of those books, that if a book is not as strong as it should be, I'm even more booked up than I was before the manuscript came in. And right. Because life's too short to read books that aren't the very, very best. And I just get to create for some of the most amazing folks. And it makes me proud of what I do. And so it means that I have to turn away some folks, but it's important for me that I don't create covers that sell bad books. That sounds horrible, I guess.
Right.
I don't know. but I don't want my covers.
Well,
you don't want to be
affiliated with a bad written title. I don't either. I don't blame you. I don't want to put my name on as editor on a bad written title, obviously. So, yeah.
Right.
That's great that you you do read them, though, because then you are close to them. You do have the feel and your own ideas, and being an artist, then, you know, you have these pictures in your head of oh, this is what that should look like, or the author explained, you know, this, and, well, this would look really cool like this. And, yeah, I mean, that's really neat, because you're right, not all of them do. Not many of them do, actually. So that I give you kudos for that.
Well, I think it also helps just that I love reading, too. So
mm-hmm.
it is very, it makes me happy to be able to read these great books. And, but it's also, sometimes people will come to me and they'll have very specific ideas of what they want. And for me, it is much easier for me to look at to read a book and figure out what needs to be on the cover. It is so much easier for me than it is for the author who spent their blood, sweat, heart, soul, and tears creating this book, or the editor who fell in love with it and decided to, to give it a home. I come in with clear eyes like a reader. And so
right. To
me, some of the very best books, the thing that should be on the cover is almost always within the first three or four chapters. Because the very best books give you the hint of the promise of the premise at the very beginning of the book, right? They don't give you the whole thing, but they give you, like, this is what it's going to be. This is the ride you're taking with me now. And, for example, I just did the cover for the re-release of a 1984 classic horror novel called Carnosaur.
Yes.
Giant dinosaurs. It was like Jurassic Park before, 6 years before the Jurassic Park novel came out. So Harry Adam Knight wrote this book 6 years before, and it had basically the same premise. But the beginning of this book, a little bit of a spoiler, but the body count is high. And at the very beginning of the book, people die. And we are on page 2. And this is not dinosaurs lurking in the darkness, eyes peer out, claw maybe comes up. This is like full head-to-toe description of the dinosaur on page 2. And
dang,
you know what you're on for. So I'm like, all right, so I guess I'm going to have to do dinosaur full on the cover, because that's what this book is about. This is not dinosaurs hiding in the shadows and the mystery of it. This is over the top dinosaur carnage in a little rural town in England. And I was just like, so all right, I guess I'm drawing a dinosaur. And but you know, it's, you've got to know what kind of ride you're taking the reader on, and that book can, you know, the book cover gives them that indication. It gets them excited about reading that book. It puts them in the right frame of mind to want to be positive about the book, you know. And so it's just so much fun.
Do you do?
Would you say?
Well, go ahead.
Would you say the best way to bring out a book that has been out on the shelf for a while, and you know, may do a little bit of editing to it, but the best way to show that book is with a new cover and a new artist doing that cover?
I think there's a few things that you can do to rebrand a book and have some success. I actually did a class last year for the Horror Writers Association, Horror University. I did 2 hours on rebranding books. And the basics are, so absolutely another nice little edit, a polish to make sure that anything that would pull you out of that story, you know, a typo here or a missed punctuation here, or, you know, the inter-formatting was distracting or inconsistent. Make it easy for people to get to the words that you wrote. And so good, nice, clean inter-formatting. I think that a cover has a huge impact. Because now that a book is out, you can see what people like. If people are reviewing the book, you can see what they say they like about the book. And so the more you can play into that in the cover, you know, you have that opportunity to say, to see that this is going to, you know, to play to that, so that more people get what they expect when they read your book. And then it's the opportunity to make sure that you retooled your book description and all of your keywords and things, because you have an opportunity to change those things. And the more you get that cover to connect to the book description and play with all that, with put the things in that will keep the, you know, the search engines finding you. You know, like if you had a werewolf book and never mentioned werewolf in your book description, people searching for werewolf books aren't going to find you. You know,
right,
right. So you know, those are the, so you can kind of you can do all three of those things. But re-releasing it with a new cover gives you an opportunity to talk about the book more in a way that doesn't say, look at me, I wrote a book, look at me, I wrote a book. Because, you know, that's, you kind of get into, it's so hard, like, as an author to say, like, how many times do I say, look at my book? How can I say this in a different way? And when you have a new cover, you can say, look at this awesome cover that this amazing artist did for me. And you're absolutely getting everybody to pay attention to your book, but you're not having to talk about yourself. And that's the same way, like,
right.
I do a lot of work for Raw Dog Screaming Press, and they are fantastic at promoting everybody who is involved in the creation of the book. So when they do their press releases, they actually let me submit a quote about creating the cover, and that goes out in their press releases. They always talk to their editors. So the editors have something to say about the book. They are very good at being inclusive, and what that does is that creates a very positive bubble around a book, and
mm-hmm.
and that helps sell the book, you know?
Sure. So my question was, since you read all your books that you're doing, do you ever or did you ever do like ready-made covers?
I do. I have so every month I do a newsletter, and each month I create a creepy calendar. I create new art, just something that I want to make. Usually I go out into social media and I ask folks, what would you like to see me make? And I turn it into a calendar that people can then download. They can print it out. They can use it as their Facebook banner, as their computer wallpaper, whatever. And then I turn it into a pre-made book cover. And I have a Facebook group called Lynn Hansen Art's Pre-Made Book Cover Club, and I always post
nice.
It there first so that those folks get first dibs, and they almost never make it out of the group. I mean, I think I have actually, like, I've had stuff sell in seconds.
Wow.
I've had people say my hand was shaking when I was typing this. And because they get excited because the pre-mades are less than half my normal rate. Because it's fun to just try
also
to do something
different.
Also give
them different. A chance.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
How much is your pre-made covers, or is it on auction?
And my pre-made covers are $200 or $150 if you subscribe to my newsletter list, it makes it so that what's really interesting to me is because you always think, oh, well, because then somebody is going to have a book that is the right fit for this. But most of the people, I would say probably 85% of the people that pick up one of my pre-made covers are like, I am now going to write this book. And I'm like, that is the coolest, because I want to see
you've actually
a giant
gave them the
book.
Yeah, you gave them the spark.
You know, and I have one client who's bought many pre-mades and has actually developed an entire ongoing series around these pre-mades and uses that as kind of the jumping
off
for the writing that she does. It's just the coolest to get to have, you know, to take the feedback from people on social media, what do you want to see, and then I make the art, and then that art inspires more art. It's like, so cool.
Yeah, you know you influenced it, so that's awesome.
You know,
well,
I love
I was looking
so much.
I was looking at your webpage and your art
mm-hmm.
just a second ago, and saw a cover on there that is almost exactly what I would love to have for one of the books that I'll be creating sometime.
Yeah.
And I was just wondering what, you know, what it would be like. The one that you've got, Wicked Woman.
Oh, yes. That was, that I was so tickled to get to create, This is for it's a collection of all female writers from the New England Horror Writers, and they do this entire series, Wicked Creatures, Wicked Women, Wicked Witches, and to get to create something that had the feeling of a strong woman with a very, because it's got kind of a crone-like woman, and she's got in her hand this cup that is like a teacup or a coffee cup mm-hmm. that
it's
has
a teacup
skull.
With a skull.
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. and to get to have that feeling that you know, of that darkness and of that strength was just so much fun. When I do conventions, I pick some of my favorite pieces, and I turn them into fine art prints. And so I use this amazing specialty printer, Giclée.pro, as a small kind of mom-pop-owned shop out of Athens, Georgia. And they do these amazing prints of my art because I work primarily digitally. And so in order to bring that digital art into the physical world, then I have to do prints. And I don't want to do, like, you know, Office Depot photocopies. I do these, they print on this,
right.
this most amazing, like, warm textured paper called Somerset Velvet. He has a printer, you know, when you look at your regular printer, you have, you know, like four ink cartridges. And this has mm-hmm. 12 pigments. So the prints will last like 140 years. They have this great vibrancy to them. And then I mat and sign all of them. And so the whole point of telling you this is when I got ready to do the print for Wicked Women, I asked the group, I said, so we have two choices. I can do the front cover for Wicked Women as a print, or I can do the back cover. And the back cover is just that teacup, just the skull teacup on a little saucer. Huh. And they all said, oh, I want that teacup. And so
yeah, that teacup's neat.
And it's one of my most popular prints because I think everybody's like, you know, all the horror fans are like, how do I get horror in my kitchen? There, that's my kitchen. So I have.
Well, there you go, Daniel. You can buy a print and hang it in your office.
mm-hmm. There you go.
That is neat.
And how much do you charge for your prints?
My prints are 25 or 2 for $40. But I only do them at shows.
Nice.
Oh, really?
Yes, because I hate.
That is
nice.
Very reasonable.
Very reasonable.
There's something magical because when I do a show, I actually have I kind of set it up like a little mini gallery at my table with like little little spotlights that go down onto the art, and there is something really special about people getting to come through and connect with just the art, not knowing anything about the books. And
mm-hmm.
and I love it because at a show, people can say, this is what I think this is about. And sometimes
mm-hmm.
that's exactly what that's about. But then sometimes there's something else. There's something else that's inside them that connects with that in a different way. And
mm-hmm.
I just love it. I had a piece, I don't even think it's up on my website, but I had this really interesting piece that was a man kind of trapped underground doing this kind of almost backbend kind of thing. Like he was being, trying to come out of the ground. And I was at a show once and this very quiet man came. He didn't want to talk. He just stared at that piece of art. And then he left. And then he came back, and he stared at that piece of art. And I would try to visit, but he was not wanting to visit. And then he came back, and he just handed me money. And that piece spoke to him in some way that was he didn't even want to have translated. You know, it's just it was his. And that made me very happy.
That's the magic of art, you know. And,
right.
It's you know, it touches everybody differently. Every photo, every artwork touches people differently, you know, and speaks to us in different ways. And it's just gorgeous. Yeah, I've checked out your calendar series. So do you actually sell the calendars?
I don't. One of these days I'm going to get my act together early enough in the year to make a physical calendar for the next
year.
That
would be amazing.
But I just never do it. Every year I say, I'm going to do it. And I just
yeah, because I'm like, I need one of these calendars in my life.
Yeah, we need one in the office here, Holly. Yeah, absolutely.
Yes, we do.
Well, we do have a question. Oh, I was
saying
one thing real quick before you ask the question. But
go ahead.
Yeah, Lynn has already made her first Imaginarium sales right here with the host of the show.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah,
there's no question.
Yeah.
Yeah, me and Daniel and Stephen will be creeping over. Yes. But Carol Preflattish from the chat room, she has a question for Lynn. She said, if you know the answer, why do all the best-selling books now tend to have plain dark covers with only like a title and author's name? She said she's seeing it more with the big five publishers. Are they getting lazy, cheap, or has it something to do with the pandemic?
So it is a challenge, right? That a lot of the big five publishers, they have very much moved towards creative typography, and very controlled design, I guess, is the best way of putting it. And I think it has a lot to do with that, the concept of being able to be read in a thumbnail. I think that when you're dealing with a New York publisher, there's a whole marketing team behind that book, and their focus is to make that author and that book title the brand. And the art supports it, the design that they have supports it, but they want people to buy every Stephen King book. They want people to buy, this particular big title, because I've heard of that book. But when you're working in the independent space, then most of the folks that I work with are the people who are looking towards trying to find new readers, not just mm-hmm. playing to the people who already know who Stephen King is, right? Which is everybody. And so these people are looking for new readers. So the book cover needs to look like a kind of book. And it needs to, whether or not, they need to be able to see that name and to keep that name in mind, because you want to build that fan base. But the art serves more to connect a reader who doesn't know you with the kind of book they like, more than with a big mainstream publisher where the focus is that author and the buzz around that particular title, you know, in air quotes.
Right.
So, but I have done, in one of the pieces in my portfolio, I did a book cover for S.G. Brown, And he's a horror guy, but he's very literary, very mainstream. He's had big New York publishing deals, and he finally decided that during the pandemic he was going to put together a compilation of a whole bunch of his short fiction and write some new stuff. And so his stuff is very kind of like magical realism, kind of surreal, but very literary. And so the cover that I did for him, and he's a San Francisco author, so the cover that I did for him, I went and I looked at all of these kind of big New York publishers and where his book would very easily fit, and say, how do I take those elements of that big title and the things that are very kind of stylized typography things and very bold color and how do I translate that for him? And so his cover actually has the San Francisco the Golden Gate Bridge at sunset with a giant koi fish leaping over the bridge.
Nice.
And the book and the title actually is part of it is actually kind of behind the bridge, and then another part of the title is beneath some branches, some bushes, and so it has that feel of a mainstream literary book, but with that supernatural element. So it's something that will still connect with his traditional audience, but also I think connect with his horror fans and because of, you know, because who doesn't love giant creatures, man? And
right.
And so but to take that and to see how I can translate that. And you know, another thing for the horror audience, there's an entire market of specialty limited edition books where that fan base is very used to lush, gorgeous covers that are mm-hmm. Just works of art unto themselves. And it is so I try to kind of straddle that line. Taking those things that appeal to the diehard horror fans, those kind of lush, detailed art covers, but also bring them into a more contemporary, potentially more accessible to the mainstream audience. One of my favorite things, this is how you know I'm a book cover nerd, one of my favorite things to do is I go through and I go and I look at, like, when Publishers Weekly goes out and they say, here are the books to watch for the summer season. And I go and I look at all the covers and I'm like, oh, look, now they're doing this kind of thing. Oh, and now they're doing that kind of thing. And I try to kind of spot trends to see what mm-hmm. people are really anticipating. And then I think, okay, now with that kind of trend, what could I do in the horror space? You know, what could I do for something, you know, that, how do I translate into that for my audience? And so I just love, I kind of nerd out on that kind of stuff, looking to see the new kinds of things that are being done. So.
Yeah, the stuff that's trending, you know. Yeah.
Right. And then still make it appropriate mm-hmm. for our folks. But another one of the mm-hmm. things that's insanely popular for the horror world is, and something that is, again, near and dear to my heart is, you know, ever since Grady Hendrix did Paperbacks from Hell, which is a book that basically showed an overview of the history of classic horror paperbacks from the 60s and 70s into the 90s. And it made people just remember how much we all loved these over-the-top sensationalist covers with really intentional typography that, you know, had swoops and leaps and points and things. And so every once in a while I get to do a cover like that to kind of bring back that vintage feel and bring it into, you know, the 21st century. And
yeah,
I love
the an Unholy Thirst. I love it because it's got that 70s, 80-ish, you know, horror paperback feel. And like you said, with the pointy letters, because it's got the vampire on the front and it's got the pointy font, you know, it says 15 Vampire Tales. Yeah, it's very cool. Very vintage, very cool.
Yeah,
well,
I love it. Absolutely.
The inspiration for that cover, the editors came to me and said, we'd love something that evokes that kind of Hammer horror feel of the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh, yeah. Yeah, baby, I'm doing that.
Yeah, that looked like a lot of fun. It's really neat. Yeah, that really drew me in. I got to your page and zoop, because I'm a vampire fanatic, so I seen that and I was immediately drawn in. I love the retro look to it, because I was reading books that looked like that when I was a kid, you know, growing up, and yeah, that's the stuff I was reading, you know, that looked like that. It was really neat.
Well, a lot of your books are in that sort of category that they may be new book covers, but they look like they were done 50s, 60s, 70s. Looking at the Lake Monster and, you know, who is a space visitor and, you know, the Twisted Face and stuff like that, which, you know, take me back to the Rod Sterling type of stuff that was out, and, you know, Tales from the Crypt and that type of stuff that you had back in the days that really had, you know, the fonts and stuff were a particular type. You know,
right.
For
bloody,
that,
they look like,
you know,
blood or... Yeah.
Very sensationalist, right? And
that
series, this was the Monster Project series, and it was created for, so Norman Prentice wrote this amazing book called Life in a Haunted House. And in this book, basically it's this young kid who finds a whole bunch of memorabilia from kind of a B-movie horror director, kind of think of Roger Corman, right? Like a fictional Roger Corman. And he talks about these movies as he's trying to impress the girl in the book. And so he makes just kind of casual mentions of these movies. And so the author said, I would like you to do magazine covers that were like the famous Monsters of Filmland kind of inspired, right? This fake magazine was covering the movies that this guy made. And he said, and then I'm going to write stories that go with the magazine. So he had mentioned each of these movies. There's The Dungeon of Count Verloc, which is a vampire story. The Lake Monster, which has a guy in kind of like a fish mask head. There's the Space Visitor, which has, you know, the classic kind of 50s UFO with, you know, with the alien coming in. And then the Twisted Face, which is, you know, kind of like, you know, one of those, one of those classic horror movie actors who could play anything. And so I took and I created each of these covers, and then he went and he wrote these stories, and it was just like, again, it was like, so his story inspired my covers, and then my covers inspired more stories, and I just love getting to do something like that. It's just the best.
Looking at your covers, are you drawn more to the vampire and werewolf and stuff like that, or just any type of horror?
Oh, I love all good horror. So if I had to pick one thing, I love my monsters. I absolutely love it when I get to do a monster cover, even though they're insanely difficult for me. But I still love them. But I'm also just a fan of the surreal and odd and bizarre. So when I can do things, I end up getting a lot of work for collections and anthologies, and which is where you have, you know, a huge chunk of different stories that you then have to say, okay, how am I going to pick something that represents the style and tone of a book that has all these different stories in it? And so a lot of times when I do things that are a little bit more out of the box, more kind of symbolic than literal.
Sort of like the one that you've got, I Know What You Did Last Necron.
Oh, well, that was a special project. That was I Know What You Did Last Necron, and I was about, I guess maybe 6 or 7 years back, I was the toastmaster for this little convention up in Rhode Island called Necron. And so what I did was I made a poster that looked like I Know What You Did Last Summer, with the same coloring and the same type style. And then I put all the things that people know about the convention. So there's a Hawaiian shirt contest, so there's a Hawaiian shirt in there. We all sit outside and play guitar and sing, and so there's a guitar in the background. There's paintbrushes for the artists because there's an art show. We have Soggies, which is a New England specific hot dog, and so that's in there. And so I tried to put all, and then of course tons and tons of books, and I tried to make that so that it was the feel of the convention, and then I gave them to everybody at the convention. It's just so they could all take it back to, and it was on the program book. And but I like to do those kinds of things. Another one of my favorites is I have a book called By Insanity of Reason, and it's kind of a deconstructed spiral face. It's very, well, here's an even better one. So I did a cover for Scott Edelman, who is an 8-time Bram Stoker nominated author who has just, mm-hmm. His stories are amazing. And this cover has, the book it deals with, the recurring themes through the book are things, a lot of stories of loss. They're older characters, so it's not like, you know, some sexy 16-year-old girl on the cover. It's like his stories dealt a lot with loss of memory and people holding on to things that they shouldn't. And I thought, how do I put all of this really deep, amazing stuff into an image? And so the image itself is a faceless face that is an older woman, but her head is kind of elongated, and between the top of the head and the bottom of the head, it's like strips of flesh create a cage, and inside mm-hmm. the cage is a death's head moth. So here it is, this character that is hard to remember because there is no face, with holding on to death inside her head, and it was such a privilege to get to create for Scott, because I've known him for a gazillion years, and this was a book for Cemetery Dance Publications, and I think it took me 36 hours to create his cover. And, but to be able to take something like that, and so that's a really good example of the kind of surreal stuff that I do. Or Lost Creatures, where it was the giant koi leaping over the San Francisco Bridge. Anytime,
right.
But I also have I've also developed a very interesting kind of subgenre in the things that I do, where I do I love creepy flowers a lot. If I can do really weird, messed up things and make them beautiful as well, I love that. I did a cover. There's a draft cover that's up on my website. I need to update it with the new cover. But I did a cover for an anthology called Under Her Skin by Black Spot Books. And it's a women in horror poetry anthology, and it is basically a who's who of female poets, horror poets, and it's just the most amazing book. And the cover is this kind of golden woman covered in where it's kind of like black oily drips coming down through her skin and flowers coming out of those rivulets in her skin. So it's like flowers being born out of her pain. And that's very much what that book is. But so I have a whole little subsection of like a complex accident of life. And I think on my website, I have a little manifesto, and on the very first page, and it says, story first, horror is beautiful, authors deserve readers, readers deserve the best books, I'm here to tell you a story, lean in. And that's my life, right? So, because it's always about the story before anything else, and I believe that even the most horrible thing, even the darkest, most intense, depraved book has the potential to have beauty in it. And
it's all art.
Right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's true.
It is. It is just
and it touches people. Like, you know, it's with the art, it's with the, even a story that you think is so sad or just, you know, very much, you know, gory or to some people, or, you know, to others, it touches them totally different. You know, it might be entertaining or it might be, ooh, you know, therapeutic. Everyone's different. Art is all about interpretation.
it absolutely is. And you talk about the therapy, going back to Scott Edelman's book, Things That Never Happened, the one with the faceless cage head woman. Several of the stories dealt with people with Alzheimer's, and my mom actually passed away from complications associated with Alzheimer's, and I have never been able, until I did this cover, I was never able to do any art that wasn't that connected in that way. It was very hard to process, and to have to take and do a book where that is a recurring theme, it was very impactful for me to get to create that piece for him, and it actually helped me kind of wrap my arms around some of the things that had been very hard for me, and that's. That's what a good book can do.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, definitely can be a major healing type of process. Mm-hmm. We talked about that even last week with our guest last week, but yeah, definitely can help others through a healing on certain things. But that is definitely. And
it's true.
But on a now We got about, let's see, it looks like about 15 minutes left in the live show, but I want to make sure I get a couple of these things in because we've got, of course, the vampire fanatic herself, Holly, with us tonight. And so there's no way that I could not ask you about the 125th anniversary edition of Dracula for the Bram Stoker estate, because Holly has talked about that constantly since she came aboard for Imaginarium, and it's just so cool. So I would love to hear about the story surrounding that, and just anything you want to share about that.
To create this was just, I can't even describe how I felt. I've recently moved from Atlanta to Chattanooga. In December of this past year, but we started moving in November, and we had just put in the application for the house. And on the way home, I get the call. Would you be interested in doing this? And yes. Never even mind that I'm having to move an entire house in the middle of what was still the pandemic, while I still had a gazillion other commissions. And at one point during the pandemic, I actually had 70 book cover commissions in my queue at the same time.
Wow.
It's insane. I did, over the pandemic, I did 131 pieces of art from the time.
Wow.
And I consider the pandemic for us being the time from when we started self-isolating until we were fully vaccinated. So that was like 14 months, and in 14 months I did 131 pieces of art. It was insane.
Wow.
But I had met, Dacre Stoker at several different conventions. We had, crossed paths several times through the years, and he remembered my art. And he said he really liked my style, and Dacre Stoker is the great grandnephew of Bram Stoker, and he travels all over the world speaking about Bram Stoker and Dracula, and this year is the 125th anniversary. And he wanted to do something special. He does a lot of speaking engagements, and he wanted an edition of Dracula that felt that would be easy for people to connect with when he did shows. And so then you have to go and you have to say, okay, there have been 125 years of Dracula covers. What do you do? And so you start by trying to look at every Dracula cover that's ever been done, which is like an exercise in futility.
A lot.
And just like, how do you make it his and mine and worthy of 125 years, which it was so stressful. Like, how, I'm not even sure. And then in the midst of this, we're moving. And then right after that, in the midst of working and stressing over the Dracula cover, that's when I got asked to do my second Weird Tales cover as well. Also, while we're in the middle of the move, like, just, I can't even describe. And you think and you try to put all the different things, all the different inspiration into your brain and consume a lot. And I have a very busy life, but every night before I go to bed, I meditate. And after I came out of my meditation and I woke up and I was just, coming out of it, and I was just laying in bed, and all of a sudden I saw that bat and the moon and the castle, And I didn't even have paper next to my bed, and I got out my phone, and I have the Procreate app on my phone. I didn't even have a stylus. And so here I am with my finger trying to sketch what I saw in my brain so I wouldn't forget it. And what I saw in my brain was that bat, that moon, and the thought that underneath, then that we would have really cool typography and that we would have a castle or the ruins, something moving inside that bat. And interestingly enough, I mean, the shape of the bat is the shape of what I drew. After meditating, right as I'm falling asleep with my finger on my phone, but it took 4 months of working with it, reworking, and Dacre Stoker was amazing. We had these long conversations before I even started about what he, how he wanted to use the book and what he thought was important about the Stoker-Dracula relationship. And what is really interesting about the cover, because for the folks who are just listening, it is a giant bat passing over the moon, and inside there is a castle, which is actually Slane's castle, not what you consider the traditional kind of Dracula's castle that everybody associates, but it is the castle that was used as the model when Stoker wrote the book. And so it's the first time that Slane's castle has ever appeared on the cover of Dracula. And we thought about it, and I said, there are all these different incarnations of Dracula, right? And we talked about it, and really when you think about the Dracula story, the character who leads you into the story is Jonathan Harker, right? And in the corner approaching the castle is Jonathan Harker in this book. And so Dracula is not, Dracula in his human form is not on the cover of this book. But when I first showed Dacre this version, I said, I don't know, because, we don't have Dracula on the cover. And he said, oh, yes, we do. He's right there. He's the bat looming over it all. And I'm like, oh, yes. And yes. And so it was, but it was wonderful. And we worked, I worked for 4 months on this, because I think so much of it was trying to come up with the idea, working on the process. And the typography was all hand-drawn, which took forever. But I wanted something that felt like it spoke to that 125 years of tradition, but also felt like it was now as well. And to get the opportunity to create for the Stoker estate is like, wow. Just wow.
Just crazy. I know when you applied the Imaginarium and I was reading through that, I stopped and I said, Stephen. And
true story.
I am a vampire through and through.
She almost
and I'm like,
out.
Oh my God, I said, I've got to hear the story, how this came about. And the cover, I love how you did the Dracula. It's got the retro feel again, like the old. It reminds me of the old Dracula movies. The old the way they spelled his name with that type of font, and the bat itself, the way you drew like the points, like his wings, it reminds you of like blood dripping down, except it's black. It's part of the bat. but it almost has the shape of like blood. And then you've got that like reddish background with the fog, which is also that mist that you've got in there. That's also Dracula.
Oh, yeah.
So he's definitely on there. He is on there. I mean, it's his personification right there.
Big white,
the mist, the bat. Yeah, I love it. All about it.
Yeah. It's, to get to do, I mean, I have been, like I said, I've been a cover artist for 12 years. And I, for the longest time, I just kind of did what I did and I never talked about it. And then it just, I've had the most amazing opportunities, particularly in the last 2 years. I mean, I just, I'm agog. I got to do the cover for Weird Tales magazine and issue number 364, and which means there were 363 other covers with amazing artists who created for this, you know, magazine that, oh my gosh, how did I get to do that? I mean, and I just, you know, I'm just so fortunate. And when I get opportunities to do things that are, just really special to me, I'm so grateful because they allow me to kind of stretch myself as an artist to go outside of my comfort zone and have the opportunity to contribute to this big horror genre that I love so much, that I have loved since I was a tiny child. And I'm just grateful every single day that I get to do this.
Fantastic. And we may go a couple minutes over, and of course that's all recorded for the downloadable streamable version. But before the live clock runs out, I do want to give you a chance to talk about how to folks can find and get on your newsletter, and then again to go over your website and any particular social media you might want to share, you know, on the show.
Oh, well, thank you. It's actually very easy. I am Lynn Hansen Art on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and my website is just lynnhansenart.com. So LYNNEHANSEN and art. So, and from my website, there's a little tab for newsletter. That's the easiest way to get there. All you have to remember is my name and art.
Nice and easy.
And I signed up. So you've got another one because I signed up tonight.
Oh, yes.
Thank you.
Well, yeah, see, now you can say that objectively that being on the show increased your newsletter subscriptions.
There you go.
Daniel will be getting on there too, so yeah.
I also just have to say how excited I am to be coming to the Imaginarium because I've never done any events in Kentucky. And so this is like I get to add a new state, and so I'm really excited, and I think I love the vibe that y'all have. Everyone seems so friendly and welcoming, and it's got such a large group of folks, of guests giving people opportunities. I just think that's wonderful. So I'm really looking forward to it.
It's always had that vibe since the beginning, and it's just, you know, it's grown every year here up to year 9.
We'll try to maintain that.
Yeah, you're going to love your bluegrass adventure.
Yes.
Yeah,
oh, you will,
yes. Hear from everybody how it recharges and revitalizes them creatively, you know, creatively and everything. I mean, it's a lot of fun. But, yeah, you also got a big one coming up here in May. I do want to mention real quick because, incidentally, it is also in my birth city, Denver, and that's StokerCon. So, yeah, you got some big events coming up here too, like in May. So, yeah, feel free to promote anything you got coming up as far as appearances.
Well, folks can always see, I will always tell folks about my upcoming appearances on my website and on in my newsletter. I have StokerCon coming up. I'm doing Scares That Care in Virginia in the summer after Imaginarium. Doing NECON also in July. We're doing KillerCon in Austin. And then Multiverse in Atlanta, which is another really fantastic and newer convention, but very inclusive of all genres, which I really appreciate. And just kind of keeps going. So, and in between that, right. Gonna keep working on book covers and making the art that I love.
Yes, and your new issue of Weird Tales magazine with your cover on it just shipped today. So today is quite a day as well for you.
It is. In fact, I even got my own personal notification that my copy is coming, and I'm like, yes! I can't wait to hold it in my hands.
We timed our show perfectly for you, just perfectly.
it was all planned that way, yeah.
But we have had a blast talking with you tonight and love to get to know you a little bit more, and I can't wait to meet you in person. But, if there's anything else that you would like to comment on, please do so. And beyond that, we'll go ahead and wrap her up here.
I've had just the best time. Thank you so much. And I can talk covers and art forever. And so I really appreciate you guys had fantastic questions. And it was just a lovely way to get through a Wednesday.
Oh, you bet. Thank you so much, Lynn. And
next
week we will have another great guest at 9 p.m. Eastern on the Star Chambers show. But I'll turn it over to Holly and Daniel. And, we'll wrap it up. But thank you, Lynn. It has been an absolute pleasure.
Thank you so much for having me.
You're welcome. Holly?
Join us next Wednesday for another wonderful discussion with a great creative. Tonight has shown, from the eyes, has shown us the world behind the eyes of an artist, the cover artist, which is a different take. But I think it was beneficial to us all and very entertaining, and can't wait to meet Lynn at Imaginarium. And I will pass it over to Daniel.
And as Holly was talking about, Lynn is a fabulous artist. If you haven't had a chance to look at what she does, go to her website and actually look at the art that she's doing there. I may be commissioning her to do a book cover for me if I can talk her into it, because of just looking at the covers that she's got now. And we each have our own type of art inside of us. And one thing that you can always learn is what your art is, and not to drift about it, not to not do it because of the fact that you don't think you're good enough or anything like that, because the more that we do something, the better we get at it. Whether it's, working with a paintbrush or something like that, or working with a pen or any other type of art, music, movies, each one of us has some type of talent in us that we can find. And until we are able to talk again next week, I implore you to be creative. This is Daniel Dark signing off.